Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Well, the headline in The Independent said, I was refused permission to preside at my sister's funeral mass. I'll take that hurt to the grave. Father Tony Flannery speaking of his suspension by the Vatican. Father Flannery has indeed been a very regular contributor to Kildare over the last couple of years, in recent years, being, of course, an active member of the Irish Priests Organisation in terms of various issues which range from whether women should be ordained in the priesthood or other issues that, I suppose, in the simplest terms, if we put it this way, would be or could be designated as having been decided by men rather than being based or predicated upon religious beliefs or whatever in regards to that. That's my awkward way of putting that anyway. Father Tony Flannery, good morning again, Tony. And will I just check there maybe just to see, did I put you actually up online? I didn't, so I can say good morning again, Tony.
Good morning, Cliff.
Thanks for that. That's what happens, Tony, when the sub is called in to fill to fill in on the programme for Owen. You know, well, you don't know yourself because I don't believe you've ever retired as such from anything because you're so active. But when I retired from this programme and make the occasional comeback, it's a case of pressing the right buttons again anyway. Tony, just to give listeners a brief background, that you were forced out of out of ministry in the priesthood by the Vatican in 2012. And that, I mentioned your support for women priests on that occasion.
There were a number of issues. It really had to do with back in the 1990s, I started writing articles and then books, and gradually the Vatican, people were reporting me to the Vatican, and this was in the old days when John Paul was Pope and Benedict was Pope, and there was a lot of restriction. And eventually in 2012, they caught up with me, and it had to do with priesthood, who could be priests, the whole issue of women's ordination, did Jesus found the priesthood, and if so, when, how did it develop, and then sexual teaching, LGBT stuff, contraception, all those sorts of issues. The ironic claim is there's a big synod on in Rome now, people possibly know about that.
I do, yeah.
Yes. All these issues are on the floor in the Senate and Rome at this stage. So an enormous change has happened in the church since Francis. When Francis came in, you see, he asked people to speak freely and without fear. And that was a big, big change at the church. So I suppose I'm sitting here, I'm still out of ministry, and all the things and not just me, a lot of other people are arguing for them too, debating about them, are now on the floor in Rome, and no change in my situation.
Yeah, and I'll come to that very, very personal situation in due course, Tony. But is there not a sort of a two-avenue church as it is anyway? Because many of the things you're talking about there, are they not, to use a word, maybe tolerated or ignored in parts of the church? For example, I'm thinking about, is there not a different set of values applied to priests in some South American countries, or maybe in Africa, as it tends to be applied in the Western world?
I'd say that's probably true, Clem. The Catholic Church is an enormous organisation, 1.2 billion or something like that, and different cultures and different traditions and all of that. The interesting thing about that, Tim, you know, in the synodal process that went on all over the world in the last 2 or 3 years and then eventually culminated in what's happening now, it was surprising how much uniformity there was in the reports from all the different places. The same issues tended to come up. Now, I didn't expect that. So maybe the differences hadn't as big as I would have thought to her.
Yeah. But isn't this thing about, you know, not women priests not being acceptable, that's a patriarchal thing, isn't it? It's not founded in any fundamental aspect of Catholic beliefs or spiritual belief.
Absolutely, that is very much church teaching, and I suppose it's interesting now, one of the big men in Rome now, Cardinal Hollerich, I think he's Swiss, recently said, by far the biggest issue facing the church is the equality of women. And it's wonderful to hear somebody like that saying that, but it is so true. The church is just so far behind in its attitude.
But maybe, Tony, the church is only addressing that or even been coming around to addressing it now because it's been forced by circumstances in that there are so few male priests available that the church will have no other choice but to be forced into that. But that kind of value about women is patriarchal, I mean, born in the annals of history. And it's not too long ago, Tony Flannery, since women were required to go to church after giving birth to a baby to be churched and purified and cleansed. I mean, but you mentioned Francis there.
Yeah.
And you mentioned him in what seemed to me a kind of a more positive aspect. But yet, are there not soundings that he's not at all as liberal as he might be? Or is it that he would like to be, but is controlled by a very conservative curia?
To some extent, that's true. And maybe you're quoting Mary McAleese a bit, who is not at all a fan of Francis. I'd have great time for Francis Clem. I think he has already brought about an enormous amount of change. I don't think he's going to ordain women in his time or make any major changes like that. But what he's doing, and this in the end maybe is much more important, is he's opening up to debate and he's creating structures that are much wider than the traditional structures. And I think that will gradually feed into change as time goes on. It won't happen fast in the church, and we have to accept that. It's a very old institution, and it moves slowly. But I'd be very hopeful about what has happened in the last 10 years or so.
Tony, have you ever at any stage, I mean, most people when they get banned from something, there's a term of time. Even in the Rugby World Cup, you get 10 minutes in the sin bin or whatever else. You're in the sin bin now, Tony, if I might use that term with the greatest of respect, since 2012, like.
I got the red card.
You did.
No coming back from the red card. It's a strange system. There's no system by which I can appeal my situation. I would depend on some church authorities taking it up, going to Francis, talking to him about it or whatever, and I'd be critical of the headquarters of the Redemptress and of the Irish bishops that really, they've just left the situation where it is, and it's frustrating, and I get angry about it at times, and then I get on with my life, because what else can you do? But there's a lot that's wrong with the way the church deals with issues like mine. Its system of justice is medieval, or system of injustice, I would say, is medieval, and it hasn't really learned from civil society and how to deal with cases like this.
And yet we've seen many, many cases which have been chronicled of the church moving priests who were found guilty of child sexual abuse or whatever else, and moving them to other parishes or out of view or whatever else, but not necessarily suspending them at all.
And that was one of the problems I had, Tim, when I was first suspended from ministry, like 2012 was. The whole clerical sex abuse thing was a big topic of conversation.
Yeah.
And, of course, when people heard that I wasn't able to minister anymore, the automatic presumption was that I had abused children. So at the time, I was actually forced, personally forced to go public about it and explain exactly why I was suspended, because it was better to be seen as a heretic than as an abuser.
Yeah. And Tony, the of course, everything, while it's macro in terms of the world church, in terms of the Ireland church, everything comes down to a micro, very personal level, ultimately. And in your case, that happened with the recent death of your sister.
Yeah, poor Geraldine died 2 years ago now, just.
What was it? Yeah, 2 years, yeah.
Yeah, it was 2 years ago. She had been sick for a long time. Geraldine had a congenital heart condition, and she lived, I suppose, a good bit longer than might have been expected. But anyway, she lived in Tuam, and...
And God knows, when you mention Tuam, straight away what runs into our head, babies and little children. But sorry, go ahead and tell us what happened.
She had made clear to me, all along, I was quite close to Geraldine, and she had been a nun to a period in her life, and she was never married, and she was an acupuncturist. She was big into Chinese medicine. She had a business going. But she had made it clear to me that when she died, that I was to do the funeral. Whether I was suspended or not suspended, I was to do the funeral. And quite close to her, where she lived, there was a Clunan business and they had marquees. And she had even spoken to them and said, look, she said, when I die, set up a marquee in the field so that Tony will be able to say the funeral mass. As it happened, when Geraldine died, it was during COVID, and Clunan's had sold the business, so that wasn't an option anyway. And a year earlier, my brother Peter had died in Limerick, and I had no difficulty being allowed to celebrate the funeral mass for Peter, the Bishop of Limerick. I must say, was very supportive. So I sort of presumed it would be the same in Tuam. And when I saw that Geraldine was close to death, I phoned up the administrator of the cathedral in Tuam and explained the situation. The Archbishop was away. He said he'd have to check with him. So he came back to me the next day saying no, that the Archbishop had refused. The Archbishop had said no. So that...
A bald no.
A bald no.
Not even a personal conversation with yourself.
He didn't ring me at all. Now, his excuse, apparently, I've heard since, was that he was on holidays, but, like, he had a phone and I had a phone, and it would have been easy to ring me up. No, a bald no. And... So what we did then was we actually held Geraldine's funeral in her house. There was a sunroom at the back and a garden outside it, and we had a coffin in the sunroom. There'll be a few shots from it in tomorrow night's programme.
Yes, and we're talking to you in this context, Tony, and I always enjoy, if I might say so, please, and no patronising whatsoever, I always love chatting with you. In regards to these whole issues, the programme Tony's referring to is on TG Cahir. Is it TG Cahir? It is. It's Mishnach, which means courage. It's a series that TG Cahir are running. I've been watching it recently, by the way. Mishnach, which is the Irish word for courage. It's called Mishnach Tony Flannery, a personal insight into Tony, who's from Galway originally, his treatment by the Vatican Congregation for the Doctrine of Faith, which ordered the Redemptorist Order to suspend Tony from ministry in 2012. Tony, you say... And that's on tomorrow night at 9:30. I'll be watching, and I'd urge everyone else
great.
To watch it.
And I've seen it, and I loved it. For me, it's putting the whole thing on the record, and I'm delighted with that. For anybody who's worried about the Irish aspect of it, I don't speak Irish, so all mine is in English. Various other people speak in Irish, all right, but it's all subtitled, so it's very easy to follow.
Yeah, well, Tom Gregorium Hain, agus Bonimantania Vasveg, Fechunt, Erna Clorica, Untucha, Avian, Er, TG Cahir, agus Marshin De. You have learned, you say, Tony, not to depend on church institutions. They mostly don't very much care.
That's what I would have experienced. And I say it at the end of the programme tomorrow night. At this stage, I'm tired of it all. I suppose I don't care very much now about getting back into ministry because I feel I'm sort of past that anyway. And I also think, Clem, that for priests my age, we'd actually be better off if we all retired, because priesthood, as we know it, is on the way out. And if we all retired, it would create space for something new to develop, and something new will have to develop. So there's parts of that. What I would love is some acknowledgement of the injustice of the process by which I was suspended, but I doubt if I'll ever get that. So at this stage in my life, I'm glad of the programme, but I see a sort of a sense of finality about it. This is it now, that's my story, I've told it. I just want to get on with my life and have nothing more to do with church authorities. That's the way I feel.
And I wish you the very, very best of luck, Tony. Keep up your spirits. I always find it so inspirational to speak with you on the programme. And I certainly will be watching, and many others will be watching. Tomorrow night, T.G. Cahir, Láthair Tréaseanna, 9:30, Mishnach, Tony Flannery, his story. And it'll make riveting listening, folks, where, you know, depending on your point of view, injustice or not, I'll let you make up your own minds. Tony, take care of yourself.
Always good talking to you. Thank you very much.
Your Tafal Chirota Gislan Tamil. Redemptorist priest Father Tony Flannery on that particular one there. Councillor Peter Hamilton of the Green Party, good morning to you.
Good morning, Clem. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And welcome to the programme. You're with the Clane Maynooth Municipal District, of course, Peter. Let's go then, indeed, to the first motion that you had on the recent CLOR, as I pop it up here. And you want the council to provide an update on the Royal Canal Greenway upgrade. Did you get that update?
Yeah, and several others. This issue is really all about active transport and active travel. And all the Maynooth councillors, honestly, have been pulling together on that. We have four major projects in the area that are all pretty much stalled. So we've been bringing items in, and I would like to explain the four of them. On the Royal Canal, it's slightly better news. Kildare County Council mutually agreed with the contractor to go their separate ways. A conscious uncoupling, I guess. There were problems. There were overruns coming and other significant things on the Royal Canal patch from Maynooth to Intel. But they assure us the tendering's progressing now. And they say a quarter one restart of that stretch that I think everyone in Maynooth is noticing, waiting. Last January 1st, there was a community protest on the area looking for progress. I don't fully believe the first quarter, but it is coming. The other projects, though, we have two sitting shovel-ready in the town. One has been sitting around for about 5 years, which is the completion of our Mill Street. And it's the council in debate with the NTA, the National Transport Authority, that causes all of the back and forth. We've been waiting. Now, progress can be made immediately, because it's sitting ready to go. So we're looking for this one to be a priority in the next year capital funds. So our aim is to get that into the capital funds and get that actually started in the new year.
All right, good stuff on that. Peter, you wanted an update on whether there's any communication or dialogue going on with DSB Networks and our air grid for the growth of the town.
Yeah.
Is there any going on?
Well, there is. There was a good commitment that slightly that cheered me. So a lot of folks are unaware that a lot of our grid capacity is running close to an edge. You know, we hear our whole national grid is tight, but air grid in our area, they're nervous about connecting projects. They're nervous about connecting solar projects. They're nervous about connecting wind projects. They're nervous about lots of EVs. Because our town has grown so fast that the substations and the overall grid are straining under them. We had two quite significant outages recently. We don't have a clear answer whether they're connected. But Maynooth is Kildare's decarbonising zone. And as part of the agreed decarbonising zone plan, they basically set up a steering committee to have a dialogue with AirGrid about the infrastructure requirements, the growth plan. Maynooth's going into local area plan right now. The plan will be published for consultation at the end of the year. So it's timely to bring together the growth plan for the new year, the carbon change plans, and the needs of the ESB network. That's good news.
Okay, and finally, Peter, planning for a Lyreen River Nature Conservation and Flood Abatement Area in Maynooth Town.
Yeah. Do we want a drain or do we want a beautiful river? That's really the question. The river passes right through the town. There's development planned around it and it's natural floodplain, right? I think we've all seen the rain this year. We've all felt it was different.
Good to see a lot more of it in the next 24 hours, I'll tell you.
Yeah. And we've had rain when we didn't expect it, you know. Things are changing. You know, I believe that. Much more flood water to drain away. So this motion's requesting a master plan approach to look at the flood management, look at the development, look at nature and biodiversity, because it gets washed away. And it's a beautiful amenity area. There's development by the church in Maynooth. Maria Villa and a new bridge has connected the town. So this can be a beautiful river stream or a flood drain. Take your pick, basically, is what we're saying.
All right. We hope we'll see progress on that. Green Party Councillor in the Clane Maynooth Municipal District will be bringing those, many with an environmental team, to the notice of the council. Thank you indeed, Peter Hamilton, for that. Ned O'Connor, Senior Public Affairs and Policy Specialist at Age Action. Good morning, Ned.
Good morning.
A third of older people are reliant on social welfare for 90% of their income. When you speak reliant on social welfare, how all-encompassing is that beyond the state pension?
Well, this is in the context for this that we Age Action has just produced a report on the income of older people. And we wanted to look at the full spectrum of, you know, how much money do people have essentially, you know, what are the different sources of income. And we found that for very many of us, you know, the state pension system is central. So 7 out of 10 older people would get most of their income from social protection, either from the state pension or from things like the fuel allowance, which maybe 4 in 10 get, the household benefits package, which you get from 70 plus, which includes a small electricity or gas allowance. The free TV license is counted as income because obviously it saves you that cost. But the state pension is at the centre of this. And as you say, 3 in 10 older people get, you know, more than 90% of their income from the social protection system. So it's really important. It's really valued. I mean, this is not necessarily a bad thing. But the importance is that we focus on, well, how do we make sure that it's sustainable and also that it's giving everybody an adequate income.
Are you still there with me?
I am indeed.
Sorry, yes. I lost you there for a second. So in terms of, what do you consider an adequate income? What might be considered? Is there a figure that we could agree on?
Well, I suppose, there's lots of different ways of looking at this. I mean, first of all, obviously no one should be living in poverty. And unfortunately, with the cost of living, what we've seen is poverty has really gone up a lot. So there's 1 in 3 older people living alone is now at risk of poverty. And that's up from 1 in 5 2 years ago. And what that means is that you have an income less than 60% of the median. So, you know, it's really a relatively low income. We know that 1 in 8 older people would experience involuntary deprivation. That would mean they just can't afford to, say, replace furniture, keep their house heated as much as they'd like, or they're going without heating at some point in the year. So that would be, if you like, the very much the basic.
And just let me just say for a minute, that when we talk about older people here, we're talking about over 66, for example. That report you're referencing, the Day for the Eradication of Poverty Age Action, you published Spotlight on Income in Older People, the State of Ageing in Ireland 2023, which your report says reveals the importance of social protection for us all in the older age. 3 in 10 people aged 66 plus rely on social protection for over 90% of their income. 4 in 10 rely on it for more than half of their income. Was the recent budget and increases in social welfare, did that not maybe reduce your concern?
No, but I suppose what it does is it just shows that the centrality of the system. I mean, people welcomed, obviously, getting €12 extra on the rate. That happened from January.
And your report does acknowledge that it keeps many people out of poverty.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's not a bad thing to say that people are reliant on the system. But if that's the safety net that most of us are going to rely on for most of our incomes, and even people who are, you know, have quite good occupational pensions, they're still getting a decent percentage of their weekly income from the social protection system, from the state pension. So we have to make sure that it's providing us a robust base. So our concern would be it's not necessarily keeping up. So, for example, with the recent inflation, the state pension went up by 5 or then 12, and now 12 again. But it would have needed to go up by a further €22 next year to have the same spending power that people already had in 2020.
That's a fairly significant rise. And I mean, I know what you're aspiring to, but aspirations don't often translate into reality. Your report does demonstrate that a secure income in older age is not only essential for basics like food and energy, but all measures of quality of life in older age. Incomes often determine what opportunities we have when it comes to looking after our homes and our health, maintaining our independence, and getting involved with our communities and wider society. You're calling on the government for further increase currently and ultimately for that €22, I think you mentioned, increase next year.
Well, absolutely. We certainly keep the pressure on in terms of budget to budget. But I suppose the report is not just looking at the current situation. It's trying to look at the bigger picture. We have an ageing society. We know that not everybody, you know, even when they get to retirement age, even if they've been working, not everybody saves for a pension. And so we do as a society need to look at that bigger picture of, you know, what's our system. You know, we can afford the state pension. There's some talk that, you know, it's unaffordable. It's actually quite a low cost model compared to other European